Paul Jones Drug is Elk City's most experienced compounding pharmacy, meaning they can custom make your prescription medications to your doctor's specifications, safely and effectively providing you with exactly what you need. And for your convenience, Paul Jones Drug has a drive-through pickup window as well as curbside service for testing and vaccinations, and offers free local delivery. Just a couple reasons you should choose Paul Jones Drug, 809 North Main Street in Elk City.
I'm Rodney Skinner with Paul Jones Drug, and I promise we provide care you can trust.
If you build it, he will
come. It's the Skinny on Sports Podcast with Aaron Cowan.
I throw balls far. You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Cowan with the Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP.
And a good Tuesday morning, Western Oklahoma. It is the Skinny on Sports on 98.1 FM, 1240 AM, KADSD Sports Channel. It's a Paul Jones Drug Tuesday already. Into the new year. Cannot believe it. And man, what a start to the year it was, especially last night in college football. The semifinals happening, and they delivered. And I think the committee finally got it right. It feels like after years of complaining each and every year that these are not the right combinations of teams, they finally got it right with the results, with the product that we got on the field. And I think we had a feeling that was going to happen when we were talking about these games on Friday, that we didn't have an ugly duckling, if you will, in these final four. We had four quality teams that were going to give us a couple of really good games, and holy moly, we got them. A lot of fun, and then just sets up what we think could be a really, really good national title game next week. So we'll talk about that coming up. Jared Atha with you, by the way. Aaron's coming in just a few minutes. We'll hear from him and coming up as well. Hey, high school basketball, too, over the weekend. There were some really good tournaments that wrapped up with some success with at least one local team, I would say, the Merritt Oilerettes, with a lot of success down in Ada at the Bertha Frank Teague Mid-America Classic. We'll talk about that, I'm sure, and much in other games as well. Of course, Weatherford was over at the Tournament of Champions, the Weatherford boys were. They had a successful weekend and maybe a little bit of an eye raiser of what happened to the Sealing girls, or was it? We'll talk about that. And look ahead, we got some basketball games happening tonight. High school basketball will return to the hardwood tonight for some, for most on Thursday, because we're about to hit the ground running when it comes to high school basketball throughout this month of January. I mean, it's going to be fast and furious with a ton of basketball games, couple of tournaments for most teams out there, and then boom, we're in February and it's playoff time in Western Oklahoma, at least in the small school ranks where it gets really cranked up and for the full month there. And so we're already on that back half of the basketball season, and a lot's going to be determined. Who are the pretenders? Who are the contenders? Who are the who's going to make a leap up the rankings to position themselves for a good playoff spot? So we'll a lot of that will start tonight. 580-225-9698. That's the text line. You want to text us, be a part of the show. And we'd love to hear your input, get your questions. We'll answer them to the best of our ability and so forth. Also, don't forget, the Skinny on Sports is on podcast form. Wherever you find your podcast, just search Skinny on Sports. Should be able to find it. I'll get that up daily for you. And you can just follow us on Facebook, too, where you can just give find the link to the podcast on there. So I think we got it all covered right there as Skinny joins us here on this Tuesday, starting the new year with, I was saying, Aaron, man, without seeing the rundown, I'm sure we'll jump right into those.
Don't have football. One. My computer is so slow that I couldn't open my...
Happy New Year then, yeah. No, the college football, man, yesterday, we talked about it on Friday, how this potentially could give us some really good games. I think it's safe to say they delivered on that.
Yeah, definitely one of the best. I was going to start with the high school basketball.
Yeah, go for it, yeah.
And they get in the middle of the show with all the football. Yeah, but you're right. One of the few times that both games, really the last couple of years, the first six or seven were pretty bad semifinals. Outside of maybe OU Georgia, that was a good one.
That was a good one.
There weren't many. The first year, Ohio State Alabama was pretty good. But there was a bunch of duds. But you know, last year's games were good. TCU, Michigan, and then Ohio State and Georgia. Obviously, last night were good. Who was the year before? No, that was Georgia, Michigan, and then Alabama and Cincinnati. So never mind. It's just been the last two that have really, you know, where both games have delivered. Yeah, we'll break those. We'll break both those games all the way down. How about the Merritt Oilerettes? What a fantastic showing that they put together in the Bertha Frank Teague Classic down in Ada over the weekend. Ended up third place with two wins and one loss. We talked about it last week.
Yeah.
If you go 2-1, no matter how you can do it, it's always a good week in that tournament. And I wish they'd hurry up and start ranking 5A and 6A because I'd love to know where Carl Albert and McAllister end up.
They had a lot of opportunities to win that game. Did you watch that, Carl Albert?
I watched the last quarter.
They had multiple opportunities. They were right there with them. And they are, I think, a solid Carl Albert, a solid top five team in 5A.
Yeah, maybe 10-1.
Maybe higher.
10-1, a state semifinalist from last year. What is it, 42-42 with like 3 minutes left or 2.5 minutes left?
Well, I had it on in the background doing my thing around the house, and every time I look up, Carl Albert would have this lead. I thought, okay, well. And then I'd look up, and then boom, Merritt would cut it down to single digits. And then they would tie it, like I said. I looked at my wife and said, they're going to mess around and win this thing. They're going to mess around and beat this team and get in the finals.
They had a chance. They had chances. But what I was impressed with is there was zero back down. From the physicality standpoint of what Carl Albert was bringing to the table. And Merritt was not intimidated, not scared, and went right at him the entire night. And so kudos to Coach Doherty's team. And then bouncing back the next night on Saturday, I think it went 18-2 right out of the gates that Merritt was out of, in front of McAllister, ended up beating them by 15 at 60-45. So it really impressive showing by the Merritt Oilerettes. Just that 5-point loss to Carl Albert, who then went on to beat Washington by what, 42-40. So think about
this. Was that the final?
Okay. That was the final. But in the semifinals, 3A number one Washington beat McAllister. That score was 43-40. Merritt beats McAllister the next night 60-45. Now, it's a different night, and maybe, you know, if you want to, for McAllister's sake, maybe they were down because they weren't able to play for the title or what have you. But still, if you just go start comparing scores, it's really, really impressive from the Merritt Oilerettes down at the Bertha Frank Teague. And as we've seen in the past handful of years, teams that go down there and have the success like they had, at least the last two times, it has been a barometer of state tournament success as well. Coming up once we get into March with Hammond and then also with Canute. Both those teams going down there and performing pretty well.
They walked away with hardware in March, both those teams you mentioned.
That's right.
And
both played for the title. One won it, one got second.
Yep. So that's it's a healthy barometer of what we can expect with, there's always those expectations going into this season with the Merritt Oilerettes. But dare I say, this almost kind of ramps it up a little bit?
I would think so. I don't think there's any doubt it does. For themselves, probably, as well. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, look, listen, we may not play a team better than what we played in Carl Albert all year long, and we were right there.
Very true.
At the very least, it would give them a reference point to go back to in a close game of, all right, we can handle this. It's not that big a deal. They'll be right back at it tonight. Navajo coming up to Merritt. And then, of course, we got all those tournaments. We can break down those tournaments tomorrow or even Thursday. You'll be out there, I guess. Not on site. Or on site on Thursday morning.
Yeah.
Preparing for Canute to start in that Merritt Classic.
Right, yeah.
So we'll
They'll kick things off or tip things off right off the bat. The Canute girls will.
We can gather all the brackets for the week, and we can break that down tomorrow. But really, really, really impressive, I thought, from the Oilerettes of Merritt over the weekend down at the Bertha Frank Teague Classic. Who won there's not a boys' side.
No, just
at the BF. Yeah, there's not. It's just the Bertha Teague is just girls only tournament. Now, the Tournament of Champions, Edmund North was the winner as they knocked off Owosso. Pretty decent margin, actually, but double digits up there in Tulsa. That was Friday night. Dale was third. Dale beat Crossings. And then, let's see, Edmund North girls won the Mustang tournament over Mustang. Mustang beat Sealing in the semifinals. And then from there, Sealing also was beaten by Bethany, beaten pretty soundly by Bethany, 85-59.
Do we take anything from that?
Bethany's freaking good.
Yeah, well, I think we knew that going in, but we knew Sealing was really good. But are we going to overreact to this, or is it?
If you want to, go ahead. If you want to pick somebody else in Class A, feel free.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm trying to analyze this.
Ain't nobody got Keziah Lofton or Zaya Van in Class A.
Yeah,
nobody. Those are two OU commits. Remember Bryant Van played basketball at Oklahoma. That's his daughter.
Okay.
If you don't believe me, come out. I'll tell you when it is. If you're like, oh, whatever, Skinny, you don't know what you're talking about. Bethany, bleh. Yeah, come to the Pioneer Center the 26th. Yeah. Come see some of that. And you'll realize pretty quick, whoa. Yes, yeah, so, no.
What I'm getting at
was surprised
there
they didn't
will be
beat
Mustang. People who will overreact to Sealing losing like that. That's the angle I was going with this. I don't know. There will be overreactors.
Who? Who's
going
to overreact?
I don't have any names. I'm just saying there will be people that will go, oh, see, look, they lost that, da-da-da. I'm like, hold your horses there.
Well, this year was not the year of the small schools. Last year it was in these tournaments. Caddo won the Bertha Frank Teague as a Class A school. Dale won the Tournament of Champions as a 2A school. That wasn't the case this year. The big schools got revenge in those particular tournaments where you see kind of that melding of small and big. It was big school dominated this time, all the way through the Mustang Tournament, Tournament of Champions, and then obviously down at the Bertha Frank Teague with 5A, the largest school there, winning. So a little bit different year than it was last year, and I don't know what you attest that to. It just wasn't quite the same magic small schools were able to pull off as they were a year ago. But yeah, if somebody listening wants to take stock in Sealing losing to Mustang and Class 4A defending state champ number one Bethany,
we're open to bets
and acting like that's a big deal.
We're open to burrito bets.
Feel free. I wouldn't at all. You mentioned tonight, Hollis hosting Tipton, Merritt at home against Navajo, and then also Arapahoe Butler heads out to Sweetwater. Here, Elk City's on the floor as well, and Adarko comes to town, Class 4A number 2, Lady Indians. Undefeated so far, 9-0. Probably signature win on the season so far was the last game before the break as they knocked off Weatherford 59-20. Like, whoa.
Yeah.
You know, Anadarko, you know, they've been, for years, one of those teams that you just expect to see in the 4A state tournament on the girls' side a decade or more. The last couple hasn't quite been the same. 2021. They played in the semifinals against Tuttle. Were beaten. So the last 2 years, that means the last two, they haven't been. And the reason why it seems weird is because, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. So 12 out of 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. 22 out of 24. So a two-year stretch is a pretty long one for them, right?
Yes. Yeah. Traditionally, they are tough.
Question, did Sealing not graduate their good class? No.
No. They returned
seniors.
Everybody.
Yeah, pretty much. There might have been somebody off the bench.
I mean, they're like,
starting five, I think, was all intact coming back this year, if I remember right.
They played was it Friday night? Who did they play?
Mustang.
Mustang, yeah, is that Mustang? and had that one on too. And at halftime, they're going to the locker room. And my wife said, that's a Class A school? Because they had so many girls. So, yeah. So, the buy-in there is incredible. So, yeah, I bet you there are some seniors that graduated. But, no, they essentially returned everybody.
Yeah.
And that game was crazy, too, towards the end. Where they were down like 7 with 90 seconds left, maybe more. And I told Allie, watch, they're going to hit a couple threes here. And sure enough, they did. But Mustang just hit their free throws there at the end to hold on to it.
Yeah, 74-67.
You never can count them out.
No.
Never.
No. Like I said, well, we are accepting burrito bets for Class A girls winners, not named Sealy. And you never know. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't their season. But I'll believe that when I see it.
Yeah, it's a believe it when you see it situation. I just had their schedule popped up, and I know they have that annual matchup with Hammond. I'd like to know where that's at.
At Hammond.
It is at Hammond
next Friday.
So I mean that's. If you want to see some, you talk about coming out and seeing some good ball. That's
you can see them all week.
Really good game there.
You can see them that Friday, and then you can see them again Thursday, Friday, Saturday, the 18th, 19th, and 20th at Merritt in the Bi County.
They will be over here at the Bi County. Mm-hmm. That's right. Potential now. The Merritt girls set out the Moreland tournament, so they will be in that one, right?
I think that's right.
Yeah, potential matchup there, Sealing and Merritt.
Hammond normally goes
there,
right?
You're going to assume they're, well, oh, yeah, man. How do you seed that? Whew. I don't
probably
know.
I think Sealing 1, Merritt 2, Hammond 3. Sealing 1, Hammond 2, Merritt 3.
You would not be wrong either way.
Merritt 1, Sealing 2, Hammond 3.
You would not be wrong either way. I'd love to sit in the corner of that coach's meeting.
Yeah, because you'd really want to be number one. That way you wouldn't have to beat the other two.
Well, yeah, right. You're right. Because if you're number two, you're thinking, oh, man.
I got to beat them both back to back.
I'm on the same side of the bracket as
one
them.
Of them. Yeah.
Man, that tournament, too. It's the same week as the West Central.
Yeah, it'll be hard to find a tournament in the state of Oklahoma that has three better teams than that.
Girls' teams, anyways, yeah.
Yeah. I'm interested to see what that'll do to Merritt as far as rankings.
With how they performed
with the birth of Frank Teague. They're at 7 now. Does that pop them up in the top 5? You know, the one thing we don't know is, because there's not rankings yet, how good was McAllister? Is Bing's not rated in the top in the top 20 in 4A, but McAllister's record was pretty good. So where does, you know, is that a top 10 win over a 5A team? Is it a top 5 win over a 5A? You know what I'm saying?
Or does it take weight into the fact that it's simply just a 5A team?
It should, but you know, there's
and same
different
thing
levels.
With Carl Albert, just hanging with them,
mm-hmm.
chances to win it.
Well, I think you just get to see people around the state get to see them. And see how they play and see their athleticism and the strength. And then maybe that matters. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Because you look at, you know, Okima did something similar. They went to the Mustang tournament and played bigger schools. And they lost by 40, and they lost by 50, and they lost by 15. One of those isn't like the other.
Yeah.
Now, as you get further up, you know, it's kind of hard to – it's going to be hard to jump some of those teams.
You're going to see Riverside, right?
Yeah, they're at Hinton.
Aren't they up, or is it the
– that could be a semifinal of the girls.
Are they open with Clinton girls, I think?
I think that's right. Yeah, it could be a semifinal on Friday.
So you get glimpses of them, show up in time or whatever, but yeah. I mean, they'll be there.
I don't even know what time they play.
I think they're the first game. I glanced at that bracket.
Yeah. Because Thursday, we would be the next to last set. And I'm sure Hinton's last. Get people, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Get people to the gym.
Home school, yeah. Host school.
Yeah, I remember that Riverside, they were fun to watch last year in the state tournament.
Yeah.
In Class A, now jumped up to 2A.
Yeah, they got a lot of athletes. I watched a little bit of them up in Tulsa. And now, this is probably a whole different discussion, but how much of a advantage is it to go to these tournaments where every one of their games is broadcast? I found myself watching as much as I could. You know what I mean?
It can only help you.
Coaches from the other side of the state mm-hmm. are doing the same thing.
Yeah, because people are interested to see.
Yeah.
You know, smaller school coaches are interested to see just how they stack up, maybe what that means for what their team could do or what have you. And then, you know, it's just those tournaments hold a lot of prestige to where basketball people are going to be tuning in. Now, at the same time, if you just get killed, you know, I don't know how that, you know, a team like Sealing, I think they clearly get they would get the benefit of any doubt of any small school team, you know, mm-hmm. that played because of what they've done. And then outside of that, though, I mean, I wonder if you kind of know. Like going in, like say dang, I wish we'd have got this invite last year. No, that's the thing to me about the birth of Frank Teague that's different than say the TOC. TOC sometimes has teams that the team that gets to go isn't the team that earned the spot. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Whereas it seems like the birth of Frank Teague, they're more like. Looking ahead, like you said last week, this is more of a preview of what we're going to see this year as opposed to maybe a attaboy or attagirl for what happened a year ago.
Right. Yeah, it's a mix of both, though. They look at last year and their results, and then, well, oh, wow, they returned four of their starters back or whatever. That's how the birth of Frank Teague kind of looks at it, whereas you're right, the Tournament of Champions is more of defending champs or runner-ups.
Well, yeah, and it doesn't seem like when you go down to the birth of Frank, you look at that field, it just doesn't seem like there's ever really a team in that tournament that is like, God, this wish they'd been here last year. You know what I'm saying? Because if they did, they probably were. because of that, there's a little bit of look ahead, I think, to rosters. What you did last year, yes, but then, okay, who else, what you bring back to make that midseason tournament what it is? And I guarantee you, I mean, you look at last year, Caddo, Tuttle, Bethel, I mean, all these teams are boom, 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 playing for titles, winning titles, mm-hmm. in the semifinals, all of them were. And that's not just dumb luck. That's having enough research to it to figure out, okay, these teams are the ones that are kind of at the top of their classes. So good stuff by Merritt for sure. Can't wait to see kind of where this leads to them, how much confidence this gives them moving ahead. And then also, here's another caveat to that. There's also some teams around here that because of what Merritt just did, they have a chance to piggyback off of their success between now and that second tournament week, through that second tournament week. Canute is a perfect example of that. If they can end up, you know, make it to the finals this weekend, have a chance to, oh my gosh, wait a minute. We saw what Merritt was. They were third in the birth of Frank Teague. Canute just beat them on their home floor. Whoa, how good are you? You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
There's those chances for teams that are on the schedule at the right time here. And in the tournament setting especially, to be able to kind of piggyback off that success as well.
That's so true.
may help everybody to see what
they did. It's called a quality loss. And then, like you said, to avenge it too, if you're Canute or others. I mean, suddenly that loss Cheyenne took to him looks pretty dang good, because they only lost by, like, what, four?
Yeah, and we're ahead a bunch of that game.
Yeah.
All right, we'll talk college football next. Skinny on Sports right here on the Sports Animal.
Paul Jones Drug offers a free service that makes taking your daily medication safe and easy. It's called convenience packaging, meaning they can combine all of your daily medications and put them in sealed, separate daily packages. This process replaces you from having to fill your daily medication dispenser. And as always, Paul Jones Drug prepares individual blister packaging for long-term care patients. With their drive-through window, curbside service, and free local delivery, it's just more reasons you should choose Paul Jones Drug, 809 North Main Street, in Elk City.
I'm Rodney Skinner with Paul Jones Drug, and I promise, we provide care you can trust.
The Skinny on Sports.
Welcome back. Skinny on Sports, 98.1 FM, the Sports Animal. Hanging out here on a Paul Jones Drug Tuesday. I just now realized it was Tuesday, Jared.
Did you?
Yeah, pretty much. Paul Jones Drug, care you can trust, with free delivery in the Elk City area. 809 North Main Street is their location. Go visit Rodney and the gang at Paul Jones Drug. They are the most experienced compounding pharmacy in Elk City. They've been doing it longer than everybody. Free local delivery, drive-through pickup, curbside testing, and vaccinations. Of course, those long-term care unit packaging, they call them blister packs. Down at Paul Jones Drug, care you can trust right here in the Elk City area. All right, we kind of touched on it off the top, but man, what an awesome day of college football, especially in the two playoff games with Alabama and Michigan, Texas and Washington. They lived up to the hype, and quite frankly, they were almost exactly what I thought they would be. The first game would be lower scoring, more physical, more in the trenches type game, and the second game may not even look like the same sport as the first game, with the high-flying act through the air both sides. And that's kind of what we got. Start with the first one out in the Rose Bowl. I mean, I know there's a lot of this granddaddy of them all, and there's people that probably take that a little bit overboard with their consideration of what that game is. I mean, I was looking at the transcript, like Nick Saban's first question was, so how did it feel to play in the Rose Bowl? I mean, that's probably a little much of grandeur or whatever, but there's no doubt it's so cool. The way that the stadium, the setting,
the timing of it,
there's something magical about that place. And you know what? If you look back through the years of this first 10 years of what's going to be 10 years of the 14 playoff, the Rose Bowl is where the games have been good. Obviously, Georgia, Oklahoma, then last night. And so I think there's even something to it for the coaches and the teams that play there. And especially, you know, I guess, you know, Pac-12, Big Ten, because that was their game. But I even think the other ones kind of never getting to – kind of being locked out of that through – I mean, like you think about Alabama.
Yeah.
You know, I remember how big of a deal it was in 2002 when Oklahoma played Washington State.
Yeah.
You know, a storied program like that that never got to step foot on that field, all of a sudden was there because of the BCS and how special that really seemed to a lot of those players. And I know it did to Bob. He still talks, you know, he's still hearing him talking about it. But the game itself, I think the better team won. There was a part, like at halftime, you know, Michigan's up, what, 13-10? And I was texting with some people, like, you know what? It seemed like Michigan should be way more ahead than just by three. They muffed the punt. The snap went through on the extra point. There was also that crate. I mean, was there more of a Big 12 ref call than a dude blocking a dude and finishing him off on the ground and getting penalized for it? You know, and that was when Michigan had just scored to tie it. They were moving it. That was around midfield and had a first down inside Alabama territory, and it gets called, you know, unnecessary roughness for blocking, I guess. I mean, I was just like, oh, my gosh, when they showed it, I just couldn't believe that that's what got called. But whatever. Anyhow, so, you know, those couple of things. And then there were some also times where, you know, You know, Michigan could have made a play to make a first down. Either the receiver slips or it's behind. You know, it felt like everything was really after the very first opening salvo that Michigan really started to dominate that first half. And I thought to myself, man, 13-10, we see this all the time with Alabama. And that is, it's really, really. And if you don't shoot your shot when you get it, sometimes you don't get another. And until about 4 minutes left in that game, that looked like what it was going to be.
Yep.
Damn.
They're about to make it 27-13.
We had them.
Yeah.
We let them off the hook, and now they're in our butt. But they, you know, held them to a couple of field goals, and then McCarthy. I mean, it was the right call for Harbaugh to go for it on fourth down. There was no guarantee he was going to get the ball back at that point because Alabama's offense had kind of been going up and down the fee fence. Goes for it on fourth and two. They call a great Morum. For that, it seemed like that there was the penalty down the field. It was still right at midfield or so. Plenty of time, all the timeouts in the world. At that point, it really kind of, like, Michigan settled down. Like, you know, there was no panic at that point. Like, we can do this. And sure enough, they got in the end zone. And then, you know, overtime was overtime. So, again, man, a lot of people don't want them to win because of what's happened all year. So the reason why they are winning, what happened. That team is galvanized to the core and playing for only one thing, and that is each other. And a lot of times that's good enough.
Yeah. But back to the game itself, I failed to acknowledge how cool this was. You know, it being in the Rose Bowl, but you got your two blue bloods playing in Alabama. The classic Michigan helmet go up against the Alabama. That, as a nostalgic, kind of some chills. I thought that why did I fail to realize that outside of the rankings and what this all means, just these two teams playing in that setting is cool. That is what you want on New Year's Day. And then in Alabama, though, they did everything they could to lose that game with the bad snaps and everything, and it always felt like Michigan was in control. They just felt like better. But then Alabama would make a stop, and that's why I picked Alabama in this game, because I thought that they, with Nick Saban, that they are familiar with these big game atmospheres and being in the playoffs and somehow finding a way to win and all that stuff. And I thought they were going to do it again last night. But, yeah, I get – kudos, and I'm one of them. I didn't want to because stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't like it, but I will give them credit where credit is due. They didn't need sign stealing or anything, whatever it was. They took it to Alabama, which a lot of teams are almost intimidated to do, I think, but they took it to them, especially on the ground. But man, I got to give it up to McCarthy, because some plays, make some throws, make some. It kind of reminded me like Kyler Murray or Baker Mayfield, and way just getting out of some pressure, running to the sideline and making a throw when they needed it, and then being a good game manager and all that stuff. He just looked like the more calm veteran quarterback back there as compared to Milroe. Now let's talk about that last play. When you saw it live, you go, that was it. But then when they broke it down, it was wide open.
If he cuts left, the left, if he would have just followed the guard, the pulling guard, it was a touchdown.
They said that the snap.
It was a low snap. There's no doubt about it. And golly,
it's hard to blame it. But their first touchdown came off of a bad snap too. So I was like, can you really blame them? But
you know, if you've watched much Alabama, that has been a thing.
Bad snaps
have been a thing. It set up maybe the greatest play in the history of Alabama, a bad snap in the Iron Bowl that led to the fourth and third and the 31, you know. I think this is the case in both games. The quarterback of the losing team just wasn't good enough.
No. Nope.
Just wasn't good enough. And, you know, Milroe can run it. He has athletic arm. But as far as just being a good quarterback, both quarterbacks. And now, here's the deal. If you put Quinn Ewers on that field in the Rose Bowl, he may look like an All-American compared to those other two. His problem was he was on the field with what people now are saying what you said the whole time. Should have been the Heisman winner. I think you've just got everyone, there's such this expectation, and rightfully so, because of what they've done for Alabama to just never lose. You know, doesn't it feel like, even when you're, it doesn't even matter who they're playing, good, bad, indifferent, you just never really think Alabama's going to lose until the game is over. Then it's like, huh, Alabama lost. And your initial reaction is, well, what'd they do? They had to have done something bad. It can't be the other team just beat them. That doesn't happen now. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's just like you're almost trained to think that after all these years. I mean, hell, Saban, this is the first time in his career at Alabama. He got there in 2007. First time that they're going to go 3 years without winning a title. Winning a title. Not just being in the playoff. Not just playing, you know, in the SEC title game. Winning the national title. It's the first time in his whole career that they're going to go 3 years without it. That is stupid. That doesn't even make any sense, right?
I got time and someone's asking me, my brother-in-law, and he said, who are you rooting for? I said, I really don't care. I just want to really see a good game. And he said, I'm rooting for Alabama because I heard a rumor that he's retiring. Yeah. Okay, then Roll Tide. I don't know how much truth that was, but there's always that question now, though. His season's over for Alabama. Is Nick Saban going to call it quits? He's never indicated that he was or will be, but I don't think any – I mean, neither did Stoops either. It might come on an April day and you just hear that Saban's hanging it up. It doesn't look like – maybe this drives him – it all, you know, that's what wins and losses can do. You can go out on top or you can go, oh, I want to keep – you can lose, go, we were close, I want to keep going.
Yeah.
There's always – but after every season, that's the first question almost comes up, at least in Tuscaloosa. Is he or isn't he?
Well, so I heard the guys talking about the radio show down there that was good, that starts at the same time as us. And the question, their Twitter question, poll was this a good season because you beat Georgia and won the SEC, made it to the playoff, or a mediocre to bad one? And it's overwhelmingly bad. But, you know, that would probably show up in a lot of places.
Mm-hmm. I mean, ask that.
But that
poll,
one. But guess what? But guess what? That one is also deserved. They don't know any better.
No. Yeah.
They don't know any better since Saban's been there.
It is so not
fair. What do you mean he didn't win the title?
It is not fair to ask that question the morning after where everyone's still kind of hungover from that game.
Yeah, the difference is it'll still be the same 2 months from now there.
Yeah.
Because they're just probably looking around at each other going, wait a minute. You mean we haven't won since 2020? What the hell's going on? Why, they might start wanting to fire him. Lunatics.
You're right.
Absolute lunatics. But kudos to Michigan. And, you know, this has been – Michigan's almost in that, like, NBA playoff ladder, meaning – the first year they made it to the playoff, and Harbaugh even mentioned this in one of some of the pregame stuff. And they finally get that Ohio State stigma, finally beat them 2 years ago. Finally, go 10. Then you go to the playoff against Georgia, and it's almost like you're happy to be there. Of course, they just got trounced. Then last year, a little bit more expectation. By the time you beat Ohio State again, win the Big Ten again. Now it's, let's go win this thing. And then this year it's almost even ramped up even more because of the disappointment playing. And, you know, like going into last year's game against TCU, I don't know that there was the scar tissue because they were still kind of, you know, okay, it's great to be here against Georgia. Last year they planned on, it creates that extra motivation, the extra fuel to get you through, you know, the summer and the spring and all the way back to the fall. And then everything starts happening. And it just feels like that team has just been brought completely together. And they're going to be hard to beat. Very hard to beat. Now, the game last night, just crazy. Absolutely crazy game. Not really, like, in the run of it. But, like, the last minute. Yeah, you know, I'm seeing... You know, people, why didn't they just take a knee? Well, they didn't take a knee because they were trying to finish the game. If you take a knee, you have to give it back to Texas. And it doesn't waste as much time as actually running plays. And if Johnson bursts through a hole, he gets a first down, he falls down, and the game is over.
Yeah.
That's why you don't take a knee. And then the reaction is so reactionary because of what happened. No one takes a knee then. Because it's guaranteeing you got to give the ball back to Texas. You hand it off, you two arms on the ball, and you run as far as you can before you get hit, and then you go down. I think it's ridiculous that people are starting to, like, what a great coach, but why is he not taking knees? Because there was a minute nine. Texas has two timeouts. So if you take a knee, that's wasting, what, a second of play instead of three or four?
Right.
And as we saw, those seconds were precious. But then, I mean, the bad luck of that injury was unbelievable. Instead of Texas getting the ball with 15-ish seconds left, they get it with 41. And then they get the penalty for the 15-yarder, and it's like, uh-oh. I mean, that seemed like that second half just seemed like almost a Washington coronation for most of it. And then all of a sudden it was like, uh-oh. Is Texas going to win this game? And, you know, they did a nice – Ewers did a great job getting them down there. Ewers didn't fumble it like the running backs did twice. But it was – even on that last play, it's like he has a chance to throw just an absolute BB in there, and instead he's off his back foot kind of lobbing it up. You know, there wasn't any pressure in his face. He could have stepped into that throw and almost a back shoulder missile. Instead, it was just kind of a lob up. Make a play, you know, it and that seems like Ewers. He can be so, he would be maddening to me. Because when he's good, he is unbelievably good. But it just doesn't happen in long enough, consistent enough stretches for him to be the quarterback that everybody really kind of wants him to be.
Right. Yeah, he was outperformed, obviously, by Penix. He's a good quarterback, not great. I guess that's what we're saying. And there's going to be now down in Austin, there's going to be a lot of rumblings, I think, of when is it going to be Manning's turn? You know, not saying that if Manning was in there, he would have made that throw or led him to the win or whatever. Who knows? But that's all you hear when as soon as he stepped on campus is – when's it going to be Manning time? So I wonder what this offseason is going to be like for Ewers and Texas and Manning and that whole dynamic. Because he has another year, right?
If he wants to.
Yeah. So that's going to be really interesting on that side is what does he decide to do? Does he move on? Does he – kind of like the Gabriel situation. Like
all reports are that he's coming back.
Yeah. So – and do Texas fans want that? I think most will. I think they'd be dumb not to. He's really good when he's good. And if his progression can continue, because last year he wasn't great. He was barely good.
No, he's gotten way better.
Way better. Mm-hmm. So if he can continue to get better, that might be all it takes for Texas to get to play next week, you know?
Yeah.
So –
yeah, and that's
careful what you wish for. It's what I'm saying. There's going to be some. We talk about overreaction. There's going to be some. There always is in college football across all fan bases. You're going to see that on the Twitter spheres and everything. Like, oh, it's time for Manning. Wins. He needs to move on. Ohio State's looking. Maybe he'll go back to Ohio State. But I would just say, be careful what you wish for, because he might be the guy you need to get to that national title game if you're Texas, and to navigate a SEC conference next year. SEC schedule.
Yeah, I mean, as much as there might be a little bit of frustration over how he played, the good, solid Texas fans, nobody in the world wants him to leave for an unproven Arch Manning. Nobody. So, similar a little bit to the Gabriel and Arnold thing. Do you think there's throws that maybe – that's the difference, though, right? Because Ewers Ewers has the ability to make all the throws. It's not, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's not like Manning is, you know, the Gabriel thing was, okay, Gabriel can't throw it deep. He can't, you know, that for fans that wanted Jackson Arnold. I don't know what you say. You haven't seen Arch Manning. Like, you haven't seen enough of him to say, okay, here's why we want him instead of yours. We just got on the text line. Did you see that picture of Media Day?
Yes. Yes, where everybody was surrounding Manning. And
now, caveat, yeah. A, we have no idea at what point that was.
That might have been when they were done with him.
That's right. Yeah. And B, that's the first time anybody had gotten to talk to Arch Manning all year long because of the policy down there. You can't talk to freshmen. And C, he was back in his hometown of New Orleans. So I know everybody wants to make a mountain out of it. And maybe rightfully so. Who knows what Ewers was feeling in that moment. But I don't know that it's just automatically what it looked like. Now, enough of Texas. Washington is damn good. That offense and Penix, man. It was why I thought they would win. I did not think that Texas could cover their guys, and if they couldn't get pressure on Penix, they were going to get eaten alive, and that's exactly what happened. Even so, even a couple times they did get pressure, Penix was mobile enough and nimble enough to kind of make a play. At worst, throw it away. At best, who knows? Make a play down the field. But, man, with that talent that they have at the receiver core, it was a mismatch for Texas's secondary. Poor Ryan Watts. They just picked on him and picked on him. But there wasn't – but nobody covered anybody.
Right.
And that's been the Achilles heel of Texas all year long. There haven't been a bunch of teams that can make them pay for it, but the ones that were had the ability to did. TCU, Houston, Oklahoma. You know, that was the almost the most disappointing part about Oklahoma State's performance is they couldn't keep the big guys off of Bowman enough to get him to start slinging it around.
Downfield, yeah.
But Washington, this is a fascinating matchup to me.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating matchup because if there is somebody that seems equipped defensively to be able to slow them down a little bit, it would be Michigan. Now, I don't know that they've seen anything, though, like they're going to see from, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, Ohio State wasn't what they normally are in that aspect. A little bit McCord. You know what I'm saying? They weren't quite as high-flying, you know, as like a year ago with Stroud and all those guys. And so this may be a little bit they're going to level up for sure with anything that they've seen. But I was thoroughly impressed with Washington. Thoroughly impressed. Not just offensively, but you know, defensively. When they had to do something, they did it. You know, they gave up yards. They did this and that. But man, I was really impressed because there was times in that game where it felt like Texas was poised to take over, running the ball. You know, Washington does the muff punt just the same way Michigan did. Then they go for it on they decide to run it three straight times down at about the Texas 20. After Texas tied it up at 14, they don't get a first down. Texas feels like they have all the momentum. Texas scores before half to tie it again. But, you know, the offense kept on coming and the defense made enough stops.
Yeah, and the reason they're that good is Penix. He is the guy. He's the dude. And I was having this conversation this morning with a friend. He asked me my overall thoughts of it. And I said, well, I think everyone is saying it, and I'll say it again, that he should have won the Heisman. You know, I want to go back to that. If we're a czar of college football, two things have come to my mind. One, give the Heisman out after all the bowl games, after the season's done. Clearly. Two, the portal stuff. Make the portal happen after the season's done, because we can get some more meaningful bowl games. I would have loved to see, Ohio State and Missouri, if Ohio State still had their quarterback and you know, stuff like that. But back to this game, with Washington, I'm now, we got our games. I'm really curious too of what how they match up with Michigan. It feels like it's rough and tough versus finesse offensively, doesn't it? With Michigan kind of want to run right at you, pound you,
mm-hmm.
and Washington want to be finesse and throw it all over the place. and I don't know who has the edge. We'll have some time to think about it and really break it down. But
I think you could make cases for both pretty easily.
Yeah.
But it's going to be hard for me not to take the quarterback with the massive advantage. No offense to McCarthy. He made some plays, but he ain't Penix. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He's not him. He's not that offense. But Michigan's got the great defense. I mean, they really do. And we saw it for long stretches of that game yesterday against Alabama where they couldn't do anything.
When was the last, I guess maybe 2 years ago, but this is a game where we can flip a coin and we would be satisfied with where it lands. When was the last time we've had a championship game like that where we go, either team could win this? A lot of those Georgia-Alabama games come to mind. Maybe
Clemson-Alabama.
Clemson-Alabama. But, I mean, there's just...
Yeah, because, okay, so 20...
And even go past the playoff
era. 2019, LSU was not going to be beat. COVID year, Alabama was not going to get beat. Georgia-Bama 2 was pretty even. Last year was not. You know what's
maybe,
interesting?
Maybe 18, that game went to overtime. Did we think that was going to be evenly matched between Alabama and Georgia?
The 2017 season.
It's 2017 yeah. season, yes.
Yeah, I think probably so. What's interesting is... We're bookended in the 14 playoff. Bookended with non-SEC title games. Year one, Ohio State, Oregon, Big Ten, Pac-12.
That is something
Year
nice.
10,
yeah.
Michigan, Washington,
It's nice
Big
to have
10,
a
Pac-12.
Title game without Alabama, Georgia, or Clemson in it.
Yeah, it's weird how it wraps it up at the end, huh? We'll be back.
Paul Jones Drug is Elk City's most experienced compounding pharmacy, meaning they can custom make your prescription medications to your doctor's specifications, safely and effectively providing you with exactly what you need. And for your convenience, Paul Jones Drug has a drive-through pickup window as well as curbside service for testing and vaccinations and offers free local delivery. Just a couple reasons you should choose Paul Jones Drug, 809 North Main Street in Elk City.
I'm Rodney Skinner with Paul Jones Drug, and I promise we provide care you can trust.
The Skinny on Sports.
Welcome back. Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, the Sports Animal. Hanging out here on a Paul Jones Drug Tuesday. Paul Jones Drug has that convenience packaging. What is convenience packaging, you may ask? Well, they individually package your daily medications to make it simple. So no longer do you have to get all your pills out of the cabinet, try to put them into the pill caddy in the right dosages and the right date. No, no, no. They do it for you. All you got to do is open the package up, take the medication, and boom, you're off for the day. Paul Jones Drug Care, you can trust, 809 North Main right here in Elk City. So, Jared, I've been asked to talk about this.
What's up?
I paid off our fantasy football last place bet on Saturday.
Oh, my goodness. You did? Tell me somebody got some film on this.
There is lots and lots of that.
Oh, I'm going to need to see that.
Well, you know, you could have if you'd still been in the league.
Moving on. Don't go away from the fact that I want to hear about this. So what happened? How did it taste? Give me the details.
I went to the Sarah golf course we actually played golf because it was nice Saturday.
I took down the Christmas lights.
We played some holes and then everyone wanted that's just where we all decided to meet to watch me up the Pocky 23 one chip challenge. I had done some research with Liz on Friday about kind of how to game plan for this,
mm-hmm.
as far as from a physiological standpoint. And
or psychologically as well.
Well, bread, like having some bread in your stomach was a good way to do it. So I'd made waffles that morning.
Oh, okay.
And I put some waffles in a Ziploc bag and took them with me, and then I ate them like 30 or so minutes before it was time to eat the chip.
Is that so it will soak into the bread in your stomach?
I think that's the idea.
Not like, not the lining of your stomach or whatever.
I think that's the idea.
Okay.
And so our man Dakota was nice enough to, he put himself on milk detail. So he brought a gallon of milk, because that's another thing, obviously, that helps you mm-hmm. with the heat. So I opened it up. I had gloves on as to not ruin my eyes later on if I started rubbing them or taking out my contacts or anything like that. So this thing, it was about, it was like if you think of like a Dorito, like a normal nacho cheese Dorito, it was probably the size of maybe two of those put together, or one and a half of those, two-ish, you know. It was in the shape, I mean, it was like a, almost like a half moon, but pointed at the bottom, like a chip.
Okay.
And so it is black because of all the dust, the pepper dust that is on it. The very first goal I had was for it not to touch my lips. Because if you've ever eaten spicy things,
sure. It's always your lips.
If it touches your lips, it really takes it to another level.
Yeah.
So when I got the chip out of the package, I broke it into like four pieces and stacked them on top of each other. So it was, you know, half inch or whatever it was. And then, so put it all in my mouth at once. Started chewing. It was kind of crispy, but kind of not. You know, like you know when you're eating like a Dorito, a good fresh Dorito?
Yeah.
Every bite you take is still crispy.
Uh-huh.
This started crispy, but there was so much of that stuff on it. That by the time, it took about a minute to completely swallow the whole thing. And by that point, it was almost like if you know when you like chew a piece of gum to like death, and it starts getting kind of mealy?
Yeah.
That's about what it was like to try to swallow it once I got it kind of chewed up. And then everybody was wanting me to wait a certain amount of time before I started drinking milk. I don't know if I made it 10 seconds, whatever. I didn't care. That wasn't the challenge. The challenge was to eat it.
Eat the chip, yeah.
Eat the chip. And I'm going to tell you something. It was hot. It was hot. It was so hot. And I didn't, at the time, I thought, this is weird. And then I got to thinking about it later. I'm like, well, of course, my mouth. So, like, the milk, it had been in the freezer. It was cold, is what I'm telling you. Mm-hmm. Milk was cold. But as I was drinking it, it was like it was warm temperature milk because my mouth was so hot.
Oh,
you know what I'm
goodness.
Saying? Like that, it was. I was thinking the whole time, I'm like, man, maybe if we had some cold milk, and then I realized it doesn't have anything to do with cold. It's because your mouth is so hot. It's not. It doesn't feel cold. It was touch and go on making it. For about, I'd say like 2 or 3 minutes in was the worst.
Yeah.
And there's some pictures where my eyes look like like a demon. They're so bright red.
Look like Mike Gundy.
I was immediately crying. I mean, there's snot going out my nose.
Oh, no. Oh.
It was hot. It was really, really hot. But after about maybe 5 to 8 minutes, and it went so much faster than I realized, because I was just trying to cool it down with that milk. And then I got to a point where I thought, okay, I've drank two, like, 16-ounce glasses of milk. Then I started thinking, the worst thing that could happen here is you vomit.
Oh, yeah.
Through your nose, you know how bad that burned?
Ugh.
So I thought, maybe I need to simmer down on the milk just a little bit.
Right.
Because that'll, obviously, there's a challenge for that, too.
Yeah.
And not throwing up. So. But all in all, it wasn't as bad as I thought. I knew it was going to be hot in my mouth. But I thought like you could. I thought it, when it got in your belly, it was really going to start rumbling around.
You're going to feel it down there.
Yes, yeah. And I really didn't. More like in overnight. And that was just, it needed to be unloaded.
Well, okay, so that's where I was going to ask next, is did that happen? And how that...
It was hot.
How'd that go?
Here's what was crazy. The crazy part about the unloading process...
We're talking about it.
is that... No, I'm serious.
Okay.
The crazy part was, as I was unloading it, my eyes... And my nose, it was just like I was eating the chip again.
No,
I swear.
Oh, no.
I swear. All of a sudden, my eyes were watered profusely. No. My nose was running. I'm like, how is that possible?
Wow.
But.
Wow. Is it a punishment you would recommend for others? Would you inflict this punishment on someone else?
Well, it just depends.
And not out of revenge. Not to these guys who made you do it. But, like, if you're in. You see, would you recommend, okay, yeah, this is the punishment you need to do? Or you go, no, I love my fellow man. I would never ask someone else to do this.
So that's the question I ask. Because I'm not going to sit here and tell you I'm some sort of connoisseur of hot things.
Yeah.
I've eaten some hot things before and managed them okay, but that had been years ago, like decades.
Yeah.
And I guess it gets down, I said, so do we think... It just wasn't as bad as we thought it was going to be? Or am I a bigger badass than I thought I was? So it turns out the answer is probably B, the second one. So I don't know if I can recommend this for everybody else. I don't know if I can recommend this.
Yeah.
Because it may just take a few special souls like myself to be able to handle it.
When it comes,
it was hot.
Oh, not bad.
It was really hot.
Comes to hot food, like spicy hot food. I love my wings, right? And I'm always dipping wings in ranch. I wonder what that chip would taste like if you dipped it in ranch before you took it. It's a milk product, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking
that would have helped. I
thought about like yogurt. Yeah, it tasted terrible. Right. It just tasted hot.
Yeah,
but like yogurt to kind of coat your mouth, because like the milk, it would work for about until you swallowed it, and then it'd just be hot again. And at times I thought. Is this milk just making it hotter? Because it wouldn't.
Now imagine
stay.
Without the milk, how would it be?
Oh, no, probably, I would have never made it.
Yeah,
ugh. I would have never made it without the milk. The milk is the reason I made it.
Well, kudos to you for fulfilling your duties there.
Now that may be why I'm sounding like I am, because the back of my throat has been scorched by Naga Viper and Carolina Reaper dust off that chip.
Wow! Wow!
But, I did. I handled it. I handled it with ease, considering what you thought it would be.
Now, careful, because you're going to set up for a harsher punishment if you keep saying it's easy.
I didn't say it was easy. I said it was hot. Question on the text line. Do you think eating a raw habanero pepper would have been worse?
Hmm.
I mean,
truly, I don't think so. This was a manufactured, meant to be.
See, that's the part though where
pain-inducing hot habanero pepper is from nature. You know, is it a crossbreed of something, or is it just a?
It's just the part of me that thinks there's part of me that thinks it would have been worse.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Because.
Oh, I know how hot they are.
Because you. You have you hear Carolina Reaper, or you hear, Naga Viper, which those are they have taken over ghost pepper as far as the hottest. Mm. And that's what but there's just dust. So you don't know how much and how, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So there's part of me that thinks, like a whole ghost pepper? Yes. It would have been way hotter. Habanero, I don't know. Just because it's where it's at on the Scoville unit. But if it had been a whole ghost pepper, there's no doubt that would have been hotter than that chip. No doubt about it. But.
Well, good stuff. I'm going to need to get that video.
There's plenty of videos out there.
I'm going to need to get that one.
There's plenty of videos out there. We'll have to keep. My dad bet me $20 to eat half a habanero pepper once. Best money he ever spent.
Yeah.
And it, honestly, the best part of it, handling it the way I did, was kind of the disappointment on the faces of everybody in the fantasy
they football. They wanted me to be, oh, on, they the ground, I was gonna be on the ground dying. Convulsing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I was going to do everything I possibly could not to let that happen. There was times where I was worried. But at the end of the day, took her down.
Look up the video of the wife who snuck one of those chips into her husband's Dorito bag while they're on a road trip.
Oh, no.
And she has a film. Oh, it's bad.
That's rude.
Yeah.
Everybody have a great Paul Jones Drug Tuesday.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way back, goodbye.
Paul Jones Drug offers a free service that makes taking your daily medication safe and easy. It's called convenience packaging, meaning they can combine all of your daily medications and put them in sealed, separate daily packages. This process replaces you from having to fill your daily medication dispenser. And as always, Paul Jones Drug prepares individual blister packaging for long-term care patients. With their drive-through window, curbside service, and free local delivery, it's just more reasons you should choose Paul Jones Drug, 809 North Main Street in Elk City.
I'm Rodney Skinner with Paul Jones Drug, and I promise, we provide care you can trust.